The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we had begun to look at a section in a book entitled Darwin's Enigma, written by a man by the name of Luther Sunderland. And we were looking at a section in which he is talking about the title of the section is simply The Origin of the First Living Cell. And we were looking at the evidence which indicates rather plainly that the early Earth, I'm shying away from primitive here, because that would lead us to a discussion of the age of the Earth, and this is not something we need to get complicated with at the moment. We've already indicated many times that the creationist position is the view that the Earth is fairly young rather than fairly old. And we have discussed that rather thoroughly, so I'm not going to go back into it now. But for reasons we discussed last time, it is important to the evolutionist that there be a period of time on the Earth when there was simply no free oxygen present in the atmosphere. And the atmosphere then would have been methane, ammonia, carbon dioxide, hydrogen. I hope it goes without saying that such an atmosphere would simply make it impossible for living things to exist. So whatever other considerations there are, there is a tremendous problem here for the evolutionists of how the transformation occurred from a reducing atmosphere to a oxygen atmosphere, and the conditions being such that all through the change, it was possible for organic chemicals and then living cells to exist in an environment that is not at all amicable. In fact, it would be such that they simply couldn't exist. But that's part of the discussion that's here. We had noted a comment by Carl Sagan to the effect, simply recognizing the fact that if there had been oxygen present prior to the formation of life on Earth, it would have been a very serious contradiction, to use his term. In commenting on the great improbability of the spontaneous generation of a reproducing system, Dr. Crick wrote, "What is so frustrating for our present purpose is that it seems almost impossible to give any numerical value to the probability of what seems a rather unlikely sequence of events. An honest man, armed with all the knowledge available to us now, could only state that in some sense the origin of life appears at the moment to be almost a miracle." Now, let me interrupt his quote here. I find that comment very interesting. Here is an evolutionist, Dr. Crick, who shared a Nobel Prize for the construction of a model of the structure of nucleic acids, and simply saying the problems as we look at them seem almost to call for a miracle. And of course, those of us who are creationists would simply reply, that's right. It was the miracle of God's bringing into existence the variety of life forms that we see around us. Now go back to Dr. Crick's statement. But if it turns out that it was rather unlikely, then we are compelled to consider whether it might have arisen in other places in the universe where possibly for one reason or another conditions were more favorable. And that gets us back to this panspermia business, that life really didn't originate here on the Earth, it originated elsewhere. And I hope those of you that are thoughtful understand this really doesn't solve the question of life, it just postpones it. Instead of having to deal with how life came into existence here on the Earth, you simply transfer that back to another planet at another time, and is really simply an avoiding of the discussion of the difficulties itself. Dr. Crick's concept of directed panspermia is that the first living cell must have been transported by rocket ship on a 10,000-year voyage from some other planet outside our solar system. Because of his prestige, his acceptance of this panspermia theory has caused great consternation in the establishment scientific community. This shatters the very foundation of arguments for the evolution of life on Earth. If first life could not have evolved spontaneously on Earth, then that definitely removes the question from the realm of science. And indeed, this is quite true. If, in fact, we're looking at the origin of life on another planet someplace, science can forget about worrying about it because it simply is beyond the possibility of any study by science. We cannot even observe a single planet outside our solar system, much less examine evidence that life evolved there. Now, the statement as it was written, I think the book was published back in the late 80s, that was a legitimate statement. I have read articles since then talking about the presumed discovery of planets elsewhere in other galaxies, other solar systems. The earliest ones, at least, that were talked about have now been rejected by astronomers. I will confess to you, well, first of all, I'm not an astronomer, but I will confess to you a great deal of skepticism about that evidence. I do not know. But as far as I am aware, there is no unquestioned evidence, certainly, that planets exist elsewhere. Perhaps there will be evidence sometime to the contrary, but at least at this point, there is not evidence for that. You may believe what you wish about it. Some geochemists contend that the presence of carbon dioxide does not necessarily mean that the early atmosphere contained free oxygen. But there are many who feel that all of the evidences considered together provide strong justification for the conclusion. As reported in New Scientist, 13 May 1982, astronomers and geophysicists now seem to be reaching agreement on their interpretation of the early atmosphere. This article also said that gases released by volcanoes today are dominated by water vapor and carbon dioxide. Now, carbon dioxide, of course, has oxygen in it, as I'm sure any beginning chemist knows. Methane, ammonia, hydrogen, of course, would not have. There are many who feel that the evidence is considered together with provide strong justification for the conclusion. As reported in New Scientist, 13 May 1982, astronomers and geophysicists now seem to be reaching agreement on their interpretation of the early atmosphere. This article also said that gases released by the volcanoes today are dominated by water vapor and carbon dioxide, and there is no reason to believe that the volatile products of earlier volcanic activity would have been substantially different. I would echo that. There is no scientific reason to conclude that they would have been substantially different. Since both Venus and Mars have atmospheres of carbon dioxide, why would the early Earth likewise not have had an atmosphere containing carbon dioxide? The article said that this ridiculed the old idea of a reducing atmosphere. So here are evolutionary scientists who are disagreeing about the idea of the primitive atmosphere being containing simply methane, ammonia, etc. Now here is the comment from the article. It used to be widely thought and widely taught that the original primitive atmosphere of the early Earth was a reducing atmosphere. The reasoning behind this assumption developed primarily from the belief that such an atmosphere would be ideal and might be essential for the development of the complex non-living chemicals that preceded life, talking here about such things as sugars, amino acids, fats, etc., nucleic acids, the non-living chemicals. This picture captured the popular imagination in the story of life emerging in seas or pools of a planet swathed in an atmosphere of methane and ammonia soon became part of the scientific folklore that every school child knows. Now, that, as far as I am aware, that notion began, that idea of a warm pool somewhere with all the necessary ingredients lying there in the sunlight with the ultraviolet rays and the lightning flashing, really came from a comment in Darwin's Natural Selection. We'll have occasion to talk about that a little bit later, but I think that's the origin of that. Indeed, this is still taught in 1984 in most schools and universities. It is still taught in 2002 and now 2003 as well. So that view, paradigm, I don't like that term particularly, but it is applicable here, is present in our textbook still today. The article continued, But now this particular card house seems to have been demolished, and a new scientific edifice is arising in its place. In order to convince people that the Earth started out with a reduced, not a reducing atmosphere, that is, one with oxygen already locked up in gases such as carbon dioxide, and which cannot take up more oxygen, astronomers, geophysicists, and more recently, climatologists have had to explain how life could arise on a wet planet with a carbon dioxide atmosphere laced with traces of ammonia. By such devious routes is scientific process made. The fact again is that any form of life that we know could not have existed on the Earth if there was ammonia, methane, etc. in the atmosphere itself. It would simply have killed the organisms. As early as July 1980, New Scientist magazine printed an article on the subject. Although biologists concerned with the origin of life often quote an early atmosphere consisting of reduced gases, this seems as much from the ignorance of recent advances as from the active opposition to them. The time has come, it seems, to accept as the new orthodoxy the idea of an early oxidized atmosphere on all three terrestrial planets, and the biological primers which still tell of life on Earth, starting out from a methane ammonia atmosphere energized by electric storms and solar ultraviolet, need to be rewritten. Now, I want to stop here for a moment and simply point out that there were evolutionists in the early 80s who, on the basis of evidence, were questioning this idea of the reducing atmosphere. Gradually, the scientific literature is grudgingly presenting articles that acknowledge the complete reversal on the consistency of the early atmosphere. The March 1982 issue of Geology magazine contained the following: geologic evidence often presented in favor of an early anoxic atmosphere is both contentious and ambiguous. Recent biological and interplanetary studies seem to favor an early oxidized atmosphere rich in carbon dioxide and possibly containing free molecular oxygen. It is suggested that from the time of the earliest dated rocks, 3.7 billion years ago, Earth had an oxygenic atmosphere. Now, time has caught up with us again, but here you have in the early 80s an article in Geology magazine describing evidence to support the idea that the early atmosphere on the Earth was not reducing.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.